Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to the Sports Media Watch podcast. This is John Lewis, joined as always by Drew Lerner. Please subscribe at Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Let's dive on in. This is, of course, the week of the NCAA Men's and Women's Division I basketball tournaments, and college basketball is the story in sports, as it always is this time of year. Tremendous is overstating it, but historically strong numbers for the selection shows on the men's and women's side. Most watched selection show on the men's side since 2019, second most watched since 2014. And for the women, really impressively up 52% from last year. So that kind of gives you an idea of the year-over-year growth, because the women's tournament, it did well last year, and all of the things, all of the signs are pointing to an even bigger amount of growth this year. So college basketball, got to be feeling pretty good. It's been kind of odd, the discussion of, you know, nobody in this industry knows anymore how to just appreciate something in its own context. It always has to be compared. And so the incredible year for the women has to now be as part of a discussion of, oh, well, the men, you know, they're one and done and blah, blah, blah. It's really been something to watch. Women's game is doing great. Men's game, you know, a normal-ish year for them. If I were looking at the men's game and trying to decide how it's doing based on the TV ratings, I'd say no differently than it has the past few years. The numbers are fine. The men's game is not in some kind of inexorable decline. It's doing okay. There's really nothing about it that looks negative to me, but you know the way people are. Drew, I'll bring you in on that note.
Yeah, I mean, we're all guilty in this industry of doing these comparisons, and, you know, it's because there is some inherent, you know, compelling nature to them, right? We want to know how the women's game is stacking up versus what has been the standard for so long in the men's college game. And so in that spirit, I'm going to go ahead and compare a little bit. I think, you know, just looking at the selection show viewership, obviously percentage-wise, a great year-over-year growth for the women, but this is also a bit of a hold your horses moment for me. You know, I, like you, and I'm sure like many others that are listening to this podcast, have seen plenty of think pieces in the past week about how the women's tournament is the new star, right? It's, you know, maybe I haven't seen such bold proclamations as it'll outrate the men's tournament, but the gap will certainly be closer this year probably than in years past, but I'm not going to go out on a limb and say it's going to be that substantial of a closure in that gap, right? I think the men's tournament is still going to outperform and live up to its, like you said, its standards. It really hasn't been such a decline as people have made it out to be. So while the women's game is certainly growing, let's acknowledge that, you know, just looking at these selection show numbers, 5.9 million for the men and 1.9 million for the women, right? There's still a lot of space in between those two numbers. So great growth for the women's game. And honestly, I think me and a lot of people in media are more excited to watch the women's tournament this year than they have been in years past. But let's not get ahead of ourselves here. The men's tournament is still the main event.
Yeah, well, getting ahead of ourselves is all we tend to do. The collective we, of course. I'm not trying to put cold water. The growth is amazing. I just feel like people are getting carried away with the comparisons to the men's game, which will not be flattering unless, of course, you end up with Iowa, South Carolina, and the men's final is some randomly generated thing people aren't interested in. There's a very strong possibility that the women's final will have a larger audience. But the median game, right? The average women's tournament game is not going to be on the level anywhere close to the men's. And so people, it's two things. Because one, it's the people who are kind of looking at this as a sign that the country is moving in a certain direction. And then there's the other people who are pretending that they like the women's game, but what they're really interested in is criticizing the men's. And of course, there's many other people who just genuinely like women's basketball. I'm talking about the ones who are doing the most talking right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is kind of a Wilbon demo where, you know, if you remember during the WNBA playoffs when Wilbon didn't even really, pretty obviously wasn't watching the games, yeah. He was talking about how the fans at Barclays Center were quiet. And if you've ever watched the WNBA, those Barclays Center crowds for the Liberty are probably some of the most raucous in league history. And Wilbon's going on PTI talking about how it's a library, right? And so you're like, okay. And, you know, the Wilbon type where they, you know how that guy in South Carolina got in trouble because he referred to one of the players as this big Brazilian who knocks people over? And I have not actually, you didn't hear that?
I must have missed that.
There's this guy in South Carolina. I have not actually heard what he said, but I read what he said in the context of what he was saying. He was trying to talk about how excited he was for the women's tournament. And I can't wait to watch all these people and, you know, this big Brazilian lady who knocks people over. And, you know, Don Staley, who enjoys calling people out, let's put it that way, made a big deal out of it and the guy had to apologize. And I just kind of look at that as one of those things where people, when they aren't really interested in something, they will go over the top in their discussion of it to try to hide that they're not really interested in it. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I think we see a lot of that with women's sports, particularly when men's, you know, people who primarily cover men's sports talk about them. And one of the byproducts of that is in their zeal to show, wow, I'm so excited. It's so much better than the men's game. And then it kind of becomes this airing of grievances about the men. And it's very disingenuous. I don't know if anybody else agrees with me on that front, but I find it very disingenuous.
Yeah. And you're definitely talking more about, media personalities that primarily cover men, right. Men's sports, and then also kind of the media ecosystem surround online on social media, right? Media observers, so to say. I think when you actually watch one of these women's broadcasts, ESPN, Fox, all the networks really have been doing a great job at building out their talent there. We just saw ESPN announce that Holly Rowe is going to be embedded with the Iowa team this year for their tournament run.
You know what? Can I cut you off there? Because I hated that announcement. They could easily have had Holly Rowe embedded with Iowa without saying that's what they were doing. So basically, they have given Caitlin Clark the heat index treatment for no reason. Because, of course, it would make sense that Holly Rowe would cover Caitlin Clark throughout the tournament. You don't need to make that official. When you make that official, you are subjecting her to the scrutiny of, oh, she's so special, you give her own reporter. They didn't have to do that. This is what they did with LeBron James, right? And, you know, I do definitely see some parallels there between some of the stuff, like Caitlin Clark gets knocked over by, you know, idiots rushing to court, and people are saying that she's flopping. You know what I mean? Like, you can kind of start seeing it develop a little bit, and that kind of stuff just doesn't help. Like, you could easily have Holly Rowe cover Caitlin Clark without saying Holly Rowe is there to cover Caitlin Clark, you know? NBC never said Ahmad Rashad was there to cover Michael Jordan, but it was assumed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. But generally speaking, though, the coverage around the women's game has improved. Yes. And it's not because it's patronizing, right? It's because exactly. People are actually following these teams more closely. The analysis is better. The talent development when it comes to these media personalities is better. So the product as a whole has improved. I don't know what goes on behind the scenes at these networks, if they're getting better production crews, better equipment, stuff like that, but that's almost assuredly the case as well.
Yeah.
So there is something to be said for that.
So, you know, you make a great point. I do want to make it clear in case anyone misinterprets. I'm not taking issue with the coverage of the games. I'm taking issue with the discussion of the games among people who do not cover women's basketball with any regularity and are now acting like they've discovered the lost city of the, you know, of Atlantis or something. And oh my God, this is so great. And, you know, again, I just, you know, I don't take it seriously. You know, I'm not out here to judge people by things they said 10 years ago. I think that's tiresome nonsense. But I also know, like, I'm not expecting a lot of enthusiasm about women's basketball from Bill Simmons or even Mike Wilbon. I mean, I don't believe that they watch the sport or care about it to the same level. I believe that it's not hard to talk about something with enthusiasm while not actually feeling any. And that's kind of what I get from a lot of these, you know, the major sports talk people. And frankly, you know, the preference, I would think, I don't know how, you know, the Rebkel crowd would feel about it, you know, the real hardcore women's basketball people, but I would kind of feel like, do you really even want these guys talking about this? The Johnny come latelys coming in, they've never cared about the sport before. Now they're here with their, you know, it's born again energy. And I'm not trying to take this to another direction, but you know how born again Christians are way intense about it, right? And born again anything, right? The people who are, you know, who change political parties, they're always the most extreme members of the party. It's like, yeah, I'm a Democrat now, or I'm a Republican now. Let's close the border or whatever. And it's like, you know, you were just voting with the other party like 90% of the time 5 minutes ago, right? And it's that kind of energy where someone comes in and to try to show that they're not a poser, they are overly intense about it.
I do want to touch on kind of a built-in advantage that the women's tournament has over the men's, once again, comparing. But I think this is worthy of discussion. The women's tournament hosts games at the higher ranked school. If you're a top four seed, you host your regional, essentially, right? In the women's tournament. So if you're a 1, 2, 3, or 4 seed, you're playing your first two games at home in front of a home crowd. Now, obviously, that would lead to, you know, a more chalky bracket later on, kind of protecting some of your better teams, your more high profile teams, which of course can lead to better ratings down the line. Is this something that you've ever like kind of paid attention to, or is it kind of more relevant now that there's maybe a handful of teams, maybe 6 to 8 teams that people actually are familiar with, that are widely followed and can actually draw some bigger viewership numbers?
Well, the men have the advantage in the first 2 weeks because of the randomness. And the randomness is why people love the tournament. And that's why in a year where the tournament, the final four can be a record low, you start out, that opening Thursday might be a record high because people love that opening Thursday, that opening Friday, all the games, all the upsets. And then by the time you get to the Sweet 16, the sugar high wears off and you're like, wait, who are these teams? And that's the problem with the men's tournament. So the fact that the women's tournament doesn't have that is an advantage in the second week and onward. In the first week, it's a tremendous disadvantage because, you know, I mean, oh, wow, UConn by 56 at home over, you know, Duquesne or whatever. That's not interesting. But the reward for that is you get to the second week and you still have UConn and South Carolina and Iowa and all these teams. You have the stars are still there. So that wasn't that much of an advantage when it was just UConn and nobody else was any good. Right. But now that you've got not just the core four, South Carolina, LSU, UConn, and Iowa, not just them, but you even have teams like, you know, Virginia Tech, Colorado, Ohio State, where they're not going to move the needle that much. But people know those are quality teams. They're not random teams that got here. And you know, why are they even there? So I definitely think that the women's tournament is very well suited right now to that second week, Sweet 16, Elite Eight. In a way that the men's tournament, certainly because of the randomness, is not.
And it might even be, I won't say an advantage, because they are competing directly against each other, the men and the women, on that first week. But the fact that there is more focus on the men's tournament might kind of shadow a little bit of the first and second round of the women's tournament when the games aren't all that competitive.
Yeah.
And then when you have the competitive games, that's when the people are actually tuning in. So they might have a better overall outlook on the product.
Yeah. And, you know, the fewer eyeballs on some of these blowouts the first couple of weeks may be the better, because, again, you know, it for the women, the first two rounds are really kind of just, let's just get this out of the way, get to the main event. For the men, the first two rounds are the main event. Mm-hmm. And for the women, the main event is starting next week.
All right, John, and other sports media news here. Today, as we're recording on Tuesday, ESPN announced that they have officially reached a deal with the college football playoff to extend their exclusive rights past the 2026-2027 season. It'll be a six-year deal, and the headline is that starting in the 2026-27 season, the national championship game will be broadcast on ABC. So what are your top-line takeaways here?
Well, this was kind of inevitable, but also another indication of ESPN having to give a little bit to hold on to its rights. Obviously, ESPN has had the college football playoff national title game, and if you include the BCS before it, for 13 years. You know, there are people who are learning to drive this year who are not old enough to remember when the title game was on ABC. It's been really ESPN's biggest success story historically, getting to carry this massive event every year. It's a big thing to relinquish for ESPN. Obviously, once you start with the ABC simulcasts, we saw it with Monday Night Football, ESPN is going to take a hit. They're not going to get the same kind of numbers that they were going to get before. Now, it still benefits you because ESPN and ABC are under the same corporate umbrella, but ESPN wants 20 million viewers watching on the ESPN cable channels rather than 30 million with 20 million watching on ABC and 10 million watching on ESPN. That's what it comes down to. And so ESPN would rather have a smaller audience with all of those viewers watching on the cable networks. But I mean, obviously it's been a needlessly, you know, it's the college football playoff has needlessly reduced its audience for the biggest games for well over a decade. So getting it back on broadcast TV is the only way to go.
So obviously the big question with the move to broadcast is, where does this leave ESPN with the distributors, right? This was kind of the crown jewel when ESPN goes to negotiate carriage fees with their distributors. It's, hey, you pay us what we want, or there's no college football playoff. There's no college football national title game for you to have on your platform. So where does this leave ESPN in those future negotiations? I mean, I can't imagine a Comcast or a DirecTV is going to want to keep paying more and more money to ESPN if they don't have the exclusive rights to the college football national championship.
Well, this is a small provocation compared to the streaming services, the direct subscriber. I mean, realistically, next year, you're going to be able to.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Of course, good note, ABC comes in with the new deal that starts in 2026-27. The current deal still has 2 years left on it. ABC does not come in for that. But, you know, by the time you get to 2026-27, you're going to have so many relatively low-cost options to watch ESPN. Well, maybe not. I mean, relatively low-cost. How relatively are we talking? But certainly lower cost than cable. You're going to have those options starting, but, you know, certainly by then. So the idea that the game will be on ABC is comparably not important. And also, I mean, maybe it's the case that with direct-to-subscriber becoming such a big thing that, you know, putting these games on ABC is not the sacrifice that it used to be because those cable deals are not as significant as they used to be.
Yeah, you're certainly right. And by the time this actually takes effect in January of 2027, you're going to have many, many options on how to purchase or watch your ESPN family of networks. So you bring up a great point that this is small potatoes compared to what they've already been doing. Another headline here from the press release is there that ESPN has the ability to sublicense a number of games if they so desire. This is something we expected, that had been reported prior to this press release. It did not specify the number of games that ESPN would be able to sublicense, but nonetheless, we can probably expect some of these early round games to end up on different networks.
Well, the tell with that is that the sublicensing begins this season. So as part of all of this, ESPN has also acquired the rights to the new first round games. That was obviously going to happen no matter what. And those begin this year. The new first-round games in the 12-team format, ESPN has acquired those. So ESPN can sublicense games under that amended agreement for the next 2 years, and I would assume that the only games that will be sublicensed are first-round games. I can't see any universe. ESPN is not sublicensing the Rose Bowl or whatever. Those first-round games, maybe you'll see one of them on Fox on a Friday night. You know, they do have the Friday night game and then the three Saturday ones. Yeah.
And likely it could be two Friday night games if the college football playoff decides to bend the knee to the NFL, who wants to schedule a game on that Saturday.
They'd be foolish to. They should tell the NFL, no, you don't get to in this circumstance. Enjoy one of the rare occasions where you're going to lose the ratings battle. That's what they should do. You know, the NFL has not earned the right to be considered when they have not considered anyone over the past 10 years. And college football is the only sport that has the ability to beat the NFL. They absolutely should hold their ground. But certainly the Friday night game would be on Fox. Makes sense. ESPN tripleheader. And if you're Fox, you know, as long as you're not paying too much money for it, hey, it's an extra night, an extra Friday night. I remember when Fox used to put Tim Allen on Friday nights. They're a heck of a lot better off now. But yeah, I think you'll see a first round game sublicensed. And by the way, if it were to be two games on the Friday, I don't think Fox would get both. I think ESPN's going to maybe one a year or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, they want all of this for themselves. This is their baby. And I don't see them, you know.
Yeah, I can see them maybe giving up more in the future once it becomes more established.
Yeah.
But
I mean, and once it's a 14-game playoff, because then more games.
13-game. If it's 14 teams.
I'm sorry, you're right. 14-team playoff.
Yes, yes. So the deal goes through the 2031-32 season. This should kind of quell any sort of concerns that the college football infrastructure at large was going to go nuclear here and, you know, disassociate itself from the NCAA, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think there was too big a threat of that. I mean, some of the stuff, I mean, you got to keep in mind, the fans do matter. And the Big Ten and the SEC were going to go off and do their thing. That was going to be like the split in IndyCar. You know how IndyCar never recovered from that split between them and CART? And I mean, maybe it wouldn't have been that severe, but I mean, of course it would have been. If I'm a Florida State person, and I see the SEC and Big Ten are going off doing their own thing, I'm swearing them off for good. Like, the hard feelings, and these people, these open wheel racing people, this niche within a niche, they hate each other so much. The bile is so intense about this split from 30 years ago. And that's what would have happened if the Big Ten and SEC had done what they wanted to do. So, you know, it would have been a needlessly nuclear. Right. You don't go nuclear if you don't have to.
I don't think that it was just going to be the Big Ten and SEC. If there was going to be a nuclear option, I'm sure they would have figured out a way to include teams from other power conferences. Maybe not everybody. Well, almost certainly not everybody. But they would have figured out a way to include all the marquee teams that would want to be in such a division of college football. In any case, from what we know, this is for the reported amount of money, $1.3 billion a year. It could expand to 14, like you mentioned, so it could go up from 11 to 13 games. But if you're doing the math there in your head, it's about $100 million, a little over $100 million per game that ESPN will be paying. Do you think this has any greater indication of like where the sports media rights market is at?
Well, when you put it that way, it's pretty damn valuable. These are not NFL playoff games. I mean, the national title game might be, but you're not getting an NFL sized audience in that opening round. You might get 8 or 9 million viewers in that opening round. There'll be regular season days that do better than that. You know, Georgia Liberty, no one, you know, that's not going to be some kind of big draw. And $100 million, that's what you pay for the entirety of the other championships, to say nothing of an NFL playoff game. So from that perspective, it's pretty good. I think maybe we overstate just how big college football is, because it's the biggest thing outside of the NFL, but it's a heck of a lot closer to everybody else than it is to the NFL. College football is a lot closer to college hoops and the NBA and baseball and even hockey than it is to the NFL, because that's just how far and away popular the NFL is. So from that perspective, 1 billion for 13 games, pretty spectacular.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, if you compare it to that wild card game that was on Peacock last year, they paid just over $100 million for that, I believe. And now Amazon will be paying $150 million reportedly for their wild card game this upcoming year. This is right in line with that. And let's be clear, like, these games, we obviously haven't seen the early round viewership because it hasn't happened, but these games are not getting NFL wild card numbers. This is well below that.
Yeah. I mean, remember, wild card games, 40 million, 30 million, and at worst, 20 something million. That's a national title audience. Those other games, unless you're talking about the Rose and Sugar on New Year's, just are not performing like that. Another thing, by the way, there'll be playoff games on New Year's Day every single year now. So that is a big deal. So you will actually see three playoff games on New Year's Day every year. That will, the ratings will be much stronger for this. That's another reason why it actually isn't a bargain. Every single game in this means something. Under the previous deal, three games meant something. And you were including, you know, exhibitions where the only difference between them and the Beefo Brady's Bowl is the name and the graphics ESPN uses on the broadcast. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's a tough one to figure out. It's still a 10-figure payout. So it's tremendous, but 10 figures for 13 games is great, but the growth isn't great. That's really what it is. The money, stripped of all context, is tremendous. But when you consider what they were making before under the previous deal, you would have expected a lot more than what they're about to get.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I, for one, will be very interested to see what happens on that Saturday, that Friday, Saturday, where the NFL would like to put some inventory and the college football playoff is currently scheduled for three games in this upcoming season on that Saturday. I believe it's December 21st, the third Saturday of December. Honestly, I would be surprised if the college football playoff remained at three games that day. I think if the NFL wants to put one in a early afternoon window, then they would be silly to try to compete. A late regular season NFL game going directly up against a college football playoff game in the first round, I would still probably give the edge to the NFL there.
Depends on the network. If it's NFL Network, no way. Here's my thought. Now, they're not going to do it. But if I was the CFP, I'd put all four games on that Saturday. I'd say, how dare you even bring this up? I'm putting all four. Noon, 3, 6, and 9.
Have them overlap?
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Look, I mean, obviously, you know, I do believe that unless they're putting those NFL games on Fox or NBC or CBS, and the NFL is not going to do that.
Sure.
Those Saturday games are for NFL Network. If those games are on NFL Network, college football will win that head-to-head, unless, again, it's like Oregon versus Liberty, then maybe not.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. I mean, they won the head-to-head during the COVID year. Remember, during the COVID year, the NFL played games on a college football Saturday because college football went 2 weeks later. And that college football Saturday, those were not national title-level games. They were conference title games. Clemson, Notre Dame, big game, number one versus number two or something like that. They were big games. The college football won those head-to-heads, and they're going to win them again because the NFL on NFL Network is not the same as the NFL. And once you get down into that 8 or 9, 10 million, you know, range, that's going to be college football winning that.
You're right. And I should have remembered that those Saturday games would be on NFL Network. That's obviously a big deal when it comes to viewership. Those games are going to get many fewer viewers than any game on broadcast. So I do concede your point there. Any other highlights from this press release that we missed?
Not really. I think we've covered it all. I mean, it's as one would expect, the only real surprise is the ABC component and ESPN finally relinquishing that back to broadcast TV. Now, the only thing left on broadcast, I mean, because the women's tournament's on broadcast every year now. So now the NCAA men's basketball title game, remember, it followed college football to cable, and the women's tournament was always on cable. So it wasn't that big of a deal when TBS and TNT started airing it. But until 2032, you have this year, 26, 28, and 30, and then 32, five more times that the national championship of men's college basketball is on cable, and it's alone. I mean, the only other thing is like the NHL every other year. And I don't know, that's tough. I think that 2010 was when all this was set, right, with CBS and TBS and all of that. And at that time, ESPN was in like 100 million homes. Everyone was in 100 million homes. And college football had just started the BCS deal, or was about to start the BCS deal on ESPN. It made a lot more sense then. And if it wasn't for the fact that Turner was, you know, paying more than half the bill here and has no broadcast television network, I would say it would be about time that the national title game moved off of cable in this every other year configuration.
I know we have to keep this episode short. I had to warm you up for Deitch's podcast. So yeah. If you want, we can close it out now and tee it up for next week.
Yeah, just a couple of small things before we go. One, ESPN says that this was the most watched season of NBA Saturday primetime on ABC in 5 years, since 2019. So that includes the in-season tournament championship game, which is fair game to me. They're used to air Saturday primetime on that December date anyway. I don't think that's, you know, that should be included. This was up 12% from last year, 3.13 million viewers. And again, the most watched since 2019. Now, obviously, that's not going to be a big out of home factor because 2019 was the last season of out of home, technically. 1920, I guess, was the last season of out of home. But, you know, that was such a low rated year, if you remember that, going into the bubble and all that. So, I can't see anything to pick apart in that announcement, but I'm sure the NBA's many, many devoted haters will. Good numbers. I don't know what ABC's overall average was this season, but I assure you it was probably down because the Christmas games were down, and ABC also had those five January windows that were non-exclusive and were basically better than what ESPN would have drawn in those slots, but not very good. So, you know, you take the good where you can find it, and the viewership was up 12% for the Saturday primetime games this year. ABC has no more NBA games until playoffs, and with the Warriors and Lakers in the 9 and 10 slot right now, decent possibility they aren't back on ABC again until December, because ABC only has playoff games from here out. They don't typically air play-in games. Maybe that'll change this year. So might be the last time Saturday we see the Warriors and Lakers on ABC until December. For all we know, might have been the last time we saw LeBron James on ABC. We don't even know if he will continue to play. He's 39 years old. All right. I also wanted to shout out the great Hannah Storm of SportsCenter. She said today, we're taping Tuesday, that she had been diagnosed with cancer, at very early stage zero form, and has had successful surgery, and there's no sign of it anymore. Obviously, you know, go to the doctor and get all checked out. That's kind of what we need to do. Between COVID and some of the horrific scandals we've seen over the past few years, I'm sure people are maybe more hesitant or just out of the practice of going to the doctor, but it's important to do.
Yeah, definitely go and read that essay. It was distributed by ESPN Front Row, I believe. You can find it on social media, but personally, I learned a lot about just the process of getting screened for cancer. Got to really commend Hannah for her openness about her process, and you know, very thankful that she seems to be on the other side of things and that she caught it early.
Yeah. By the way, you know, men actually do get that form of cancer, and no one ever believes that it's true, but they do. If you've ever watched Archer, you might remember that little arc they did. It does actually happen. So even men should be aware of that. Although I'm shouting into a hurricane. The perceptions are almost, it would take the Rock getting it or something for men to seriously think that they need to check for that. But, you know, hey, whatever. So that's my medical advice. I am a doctor of communications, but it's still a doctorate. All right, we're done here. We'll be back next week with some NCAA tournament talk. Thanks for listening.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.